apples ripe upon the bough, the orange on the tree.
My hands were black that picked the fruit for you, but not for me.
Diamonds shining in the rock, gleaming white and blue.
10 hours a day in the diamond mines, for me, but not for you.
A sea of grass and mountain ranges beckoning the free.
A place to walk with head held high, for you, but not for me.
The burning sun of Africa, the sky that's always blue.
Apartheid and the past laws, for me, but not for you.
A big land, a rich land, a land from sea to sea.
And all the riches of the earth for you, but not for me.
A big land, a gracious land, a land where old meets new.
The bullets fired at Sharpeville were for me, but not for you. You've planted seeds of fear and hate in all who would be free. At harvest time, the fruit will be for you and not for me.
And that was Ewan McCall and Peggy Seeger singing Black and White, a song from the mid-80s, from their album White Wind, Black Tide. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobes Peer Robert Norris, and for the next 2 hours, you'll be listening to Bathrobes Peer's Broadsides. Normally, we're a pretty freewheeling show with lots of call-ins, numerous walk-ins, a few crawl-ins, and hey, we even considered a sleep-in here. But the studio is still in the process of transition from moving from one location to another. So this is a tape, and you won't be able to call in because the phone line isn't hooked up yet, and I'm not in the studio. But if you have something to say about something you hear here, or you have something you want to say about something you haven't heard here regarding the rights of poor people, oppressive laws here in Santa Cruz and elsewhere, you can still be on the air. All you have to do is give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's HUFF headquarters, and HUFF, of course, is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a group concerned with decriminalizing poverty and with pressing the rights of poor people to use of public accommodations, right to sleep, right to be free from discrimination in different arenas, and so forth. This is also going to be my last tape before my May 16th hearing in San Francisco, where I'll be facing a 2-month jail sentence given me by Judge Robert Barkley in February of 1994 for the crime of serving free food with Food Not Bombs in violation of a court order. I have hope that Barclay will see reason when presented with a plea from the San Francisco District Attorney Terrence Hallinan to reduce this 2-month jail sentence to time served, which means I will simply walk away from it with the 1 day in jail that I did serve covering for the entire jail sentence. I have hope, but frankly, I'm preparing to go to jail, and I suspect that that's what's going to happen, because Barclay, from what I've seen at the trial, is a pretty tough customer. He refused to allow my main witness to testify. He held
that was
Food Not Bombs activist Keith McHenry. I call him Katzenjammer Keith. You've heard him on this station giving interviews and updating us on what's going on in San Francisco. In fact, this morning we may have another interview. Barclay is also, he refused to allow the jury to hear various defenses. He tried to stop us from using the word homeless in the voir dire, the process of choosing the jury. And I just get the impression he's a very conservative man from a very conservative county, which is beyond San Francisco, far beyond it. Local San Francisco judges didn't want this case, and they kicked it into his court, and that's what happened again this time, this May, when we originally had a hearing before Judge Tang, and that was scheduled for May 3rd, as your regular listeners know. Anyway, the caravan for this event, should you be interested in coming along and sharing bagels and showing your support, leaves from City Hall, 809 Center Street, the site of the City Hall sleepout, now in its 75th day, at noon on Thursday, May 16th. So if you have a vehicle or you want to come along yourself, just come on down to City Hall. If you want to let me know about this, if you think you are going, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. The first interview you're going to hear is one involving Bobby Joyce. Bobby was the lead plaintiff in the Matrix lawsuit filed in the city of San Francisco to stop the harassment of homeless people under Mayor Juggernaut Jordan. Harassment, incidentally, that we learned from Bobby, continues. This interview was on May 3rd. Bobby now works for the Coalition on Homelessness, one of the main fighters up in San Francisco. They already published a street sheet. They threw the demonstration May 8th to force Willie Brown to face the fact that his administration is giving out more sleeping tickets than Mayor Jordan's was. This in spite of a promise that he was going to stop all this stuff, and in spite of the fact that his district attorney has dropped over 38,000 citations for these kinds of victimless crimes designed essentially to run homeless people out of town and out of sight. In, I guess, April, Terrence Hallinan, the district attorney, dropped all those charges. So let's hear this interview.
It's May 3rd, 1996.
Okay, I'm on the line with Bobby Joyce of the Coalition on Homelessness. Hi, Bobby.
Hi, how's it going?
All right, how's everything at the office up there?
Things are pretty hectic.
Really? Why is that?
A lot of stuff going on. Still trying to figure out the end of Matrix, supposedly.
The fabled end of Matrix, which still seems to be something of a fable, huh?
Yeah, still going on. Well, we just got 39,000 tickets dismissed through the help of our staff attorney, Judith Appel.
Mm-hmm.
We're pretty excited about that.
We read about that down here, and we liked it. The question, of course, is, are these tickets that have to do with the Brown administration, are they just the Jordan administration?
Actually, some of them were through Brown, because he took office in January 8th,
mm-hmm.
and these tickets were dismissed from, August 1st of 93 through February 22nd of 96. So a couple of them were his.
So actually February 22nd is also a crucial date, because I believe that's the date when Brown made the statement there will be no further arrests for sleeping.
Yeah.
A statement that so far has been something of a lie, right?
Yeah, it has been. So people, matter of fact, camping and sleeping, the tickets have gone up. We're getting people receiving anywhere from like 1,200 to the top number would be like 1,500 tickets a month.
And this is going on throughout March and April as well as January and February?
Right.
What's the perception of people on the streets? Does it seem like the crackdown is continuing? Does it seem like it's abated at all? What about the park, Golden Gate Park?
The police are still out there. It's still going on. There's nothing has changed. His statement is that Matrix is over. That doesn't mean anything, because people are still getting tickets, people are still being harassed, and, it's the same old thing.
Now, what about the statement Judy made yesterday in the San Francisco Examiner, which said something to the effect of, that there was a statement before the police commission about increased police patrols, I believe it was?
Yeah, well, since he's been in office, they have what they call a fat day, and which is from Commander Holder told us is that there's been like 250 additional police officers that have been out on the streets and in San Francisco since the Brown administration.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just been like doing their job, I guess.
And their job is to do a job on the homeless, huh?
Exactly. Supposedly, what they told us is that Matrix is over with, because they used to have like 150 police officers directed mainly going out and citing and arresting homeless people for committing the quality offense license under the George administration.
Right.
But now that Brown has taken office, he says that Matrix is over, but if a police officer sees somebody committing a crime, then they have to act upon that.
Mm-hmm. Well, like sleeping, let's say.
Right. Yeah. You're committing a crime because you're sleeping.
But in fact, do you feel that the police are still actively looking for homeless people to harass in the parks and the downtown areas?
As far as we're concerned, they are.
So you're attending some kind of a protest on May 8th.
Yeah.
Tell us about that, where it is, when it is, who's going to be involved, and what you're trying to get.
Basically, we're just trying to let people know what's still going on. Matrix is still happening. People's rights are still being violated. And, to end this thing, it's going to take a collaboration of a lot of folks, a lot of hard work and effort. And it's going to be a knockdown, drag-out Superman fight.
So when is this demonstration happening, and what can people do? What can they bring to it? What's your suggestion?
They can just, show their support. That's what we need, people's support and to understand, the plight that homeless people are going through.
Where is this going to be, this demo?
It's going to be over on Venice in the new City Hall building.
And what's the address there?
Hold on. Let me see if I can get that, because I'm not for sure myself.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Bobby, who's also a plaintiff in the case filed against Matrix by a number of poor people. Go ahead.
It's a 401 Venice on the corner of McAllister and Venice in San Francisco.
401 Venice, and that will be Wednesday, May 8th?
Right.
At what time?
12 o'clock, I think.
And will Food Not Bombs be serving food?
I'm not for sure if they'll be there. More likely they will be.
Mm-hmm. I understand Food Not Bombs has not been suffering harassment under the Brown administration. Is that true?
Well, somewhat. A lot of times some police officers are sympathetic and they will let, Food Not Bombs serve food. And then you have officers that say that they're doing their job.
Have you actually heard of people getting citations in the Food Not Bombs group?
Not lately.
Yeah, I hadn't either. There was a brief harassment incident in Mission on 16th in mid-March, and some threats, but that there actually been no tickets given. And I hear the defendant, who is now going to be going to jail for 2 months for serving free food back in 1993, Robert Norris Kahn, he's facing what's called a sentence modification hearing. It was scheduled for today, but it's been postponed until it's either the 8th or the 16th, depending on when the district attorney, Terrence Hallinan, has time to appear in court. He's hoping to have that sentence reduced from 2 months to nothing, and since Hallinan is the primary, is a big man in the Brown administration, or at least in the San Francisco City justice machine, or injustice machine, hopefully that'll happen. That's me, by the way. I'm Robert Norris Kahn.
All right.
I'm also reporting here on this for Free Radio Santa Cruz. We have a show twice a week from 10 to 12 called Bathrobe Spears Broadsides on 96.3 FM down here, and then we send the tapes north to San Francisco, some of them, so they get rebroadcast on Liberation Radio.
Right.
Now, you were a plaintiff in the Joyce suit, right, against the Matrix program.
I am the lead plaintiff in the Matrix lawsuit.
So what happened to you that made you this plaintiff, and what's been happening to you recently, and where is this suit at the moment?
Well, I was cited for sleeping in Civic Center Park back in October of 93 when I became homeless when I was on GA. I missed one of my work for days, and I was told that my GA work for was discontinued, and I came to find out that it hadn't been discontinued, and basically I had been homeless for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to the coalition seeking legal help, and I got legal help, and when I came back and started volunteering because I was appreciated for what they had done for me, the lawsuit was just coming into play, and they were trying to get people to do declarations, and they hadn't decided on any of the plaintiffs yet.
This was a lawsuit seeking an injunction against enforcement of laws that make it criminal to be poor in a public space, right?
And they actually took me a couple times to think about, because I had said no, because our lives were like exposed completely to everyone, basically, throughout the United States and some parts of the free world.
But you had many women asking to marry you, right?
I have no idea. And I thought about it.
And a number of men, too.
I thought about it, and they said that, you know, they needed somebody to speak up about what was happening to homeless people in San Francisco. And they had chosen, like, four of us to be the spokespeople, and they chose me to be, like, the lead plaintiff. I don't know actually why, but somehow I accepted the responsibility for doing it.
Now, Judge Jensen, a reactionary judge who was, I believe, a prosecutor in the Nixon administration, who is now a reactionary judge in the Clinton administration, I suppose, it actually is in the court system, ruled against you, and the case is now on appeal.
Yes.
Ruled that it's apparently fine to make it criminal essential to life activities by poor people in public spaces. Any predictions on how that's going to go, and any court dates that people should know about?
Well, as far as Jensen was concerned, he felt that the city should, first of all, that the lawsuit never should have been in court. He felt that he had read a memorandum where the police department had sent out saying that they would do sensitivity training with their officers concerning homeless people.
Mm-hmm.
And when he seen this memorandum, he felt that, well, the city can handle its own problems. So that was it. He never read any of the declarations, none of the statements or anything. So
this is the federal judge who ruled on the case.
Right. So when he gave the city their preliminary and injunction, I mean, the legal term, but he decided with them, so we had to appeal to the Ninth Circuit Court. And the hopefully the judges up there will be able to read the material that was submitted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, read the declarations, understand what's going on, the suffering the homeless people are being subject to.
Are we approaching a court date on this? Or?
It's in June sometime. I'm not exactly when.
Are you seeking financial damages as well as an injunction?
Actually, the only thing I'm seeking for is to stop harassment of homeless people. That's the only thing I'm looking for. I'm not looking for any money, any publicity, or anything. That's the only thing I want out of all of this is the fact that if a homeless person cannot afford to live in a house, or he doesn't have any money, or if they can't access the shelters that are available to them because of the number of homeless people versus the number of shelter beds, which is like 1,200 shelter beds on any given day,
mm-hmm.
and there's like 11,000 to 15,000 homeless people here in San Francisco on any given day, and if they have to sleep outside, that they will not be ticketed.
Now, I'm wondering about the extent of the contacts of the coalition with other organizations supporting the rights of poor and homeless people throughout the country. There have been demonstrations in some cities, for instance here in Santa Cruz, we're on the 65th day of a sleep out at City Hall against the city's sleeping ordinance, which makes it illegal for people to be asleep after 11 o'clock at night anywhere in public spaces, with a very few exceptions that don't in any way deal with the 500 to 1,500 homeless people in our area, in the city area, and also makes it illegal to cover up with blankets after 11 o'clock at night. Now, demonstrations in Santa Barbara and the threat of a mass migration in 1986 by then national activist Mitch Snyder produced a change in their sleeping ban, which redefined the law to make it a true camping ban so that you couldn't camp with a tent, but you could sleep and have a blanket, let's say. San Francisco is, what's the situation in San Francisco with respect to that? Do you think direct action protests would be helpful in San Francisco and in Santa Cruz? And is there any chance of support between the cities? Think about that for a moment while I get this other call.
Okay.
Thoughts on that?
Well, I'm not sure about, as far as the coalition, the support that we can give Santa Cruz. I haven't heard any talk about doing any demonstrations down there or adding any support. Our director, Paul Bowden, he might have been contacted. I'm not for sure. He's.
You actually had an article in your street sheet. I think it was either the March or the February issue, maybe the April issue, by a woman named Becky Johnson, who's our press, who does press releases down here for three groups supporting the coalition, supporting the sleep out, a group called the Revolutionary Coalition, my group, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and then the group that closely connected with the actual sleep out itself called the Common Threat Coalition. And she had an article on your street sheet. We're wondering, maybe you can bring it up at one of your COH meetings.
Sure, I can do that. Like I said, I haven't heard anything. but, you know, it's so much stuff going on, not just with Matrix thing, but Guru is busy with challenging Department of Social Services, how the treatment of people when they go to get on general assistance.
Any other general, any other specific causes that you guys are pursuing right now that might be of interest to our listeners here?
Other than, like, the contract on America that our Family Rights and Dignity person, Malika, is working with.
What about the Presidio takeover that we heard? There was a demonstration, I guess, last weekend with Terry Nussman and the Religious Witness Group.
I don't know. Well, I
haven't heard about that. Okay.
No, I haven't. We have an organization called TIDA that's like working on housing out on the Presidio.
What's it called?
It's TIDA. I'm not the acronym of what it stands for.
Now, what about the Homes Not Jails? Are you connected with them?
Homes Not Jails is still in action. Not a lot. The office actually closed here in San Francisco.
That's too bad.
They have a national office in Oakland, but they don't have it here in San Francisco.
And do you have any connections with the National Union of the Homeless?
Not that I know of.
Okay, and are you planning anything this summer at the Atlanta Olympics, where we understand homeless people are being systematically driven out of town, new laws are being passed, landscaping is being designed to make it, you know, very difficult to be homeless in places where it was okay to be homeless before and so forth?
We have this gentleman by the name of Chris Daly that was considering on doing some actions on the torch thing that's going on today. But other than that, I'm not for sure what's going on with that. It's pretty unfortunate that a city will take itself and just, you know, demolish people's campsites from where they're living at when they have nowhere else to go because of a convention or the Olympics or whatever. You know, it's pretty sad.
It is.
One human being has to treat another human being like this.
Yeah. There's also, of course, a new series of anti-homeless laws in the smaller cities in the South Bay, such as, I guess I recently was at the Stanford Housing Action Coalition convention. Meeting, which they talked about how in Palo Alto, homeless people actually prevented the city council from passing a new so-called aggressive panhandling law by getting lots of people there, which I found revolutionary, because here at Santa Cruz, it seems when we tried to stop them from passing their anti-homeless downtown ordinances, we failed, although we got many, many people, and there was an overwhelming opposition to those ordinances from those who were in the chambers, nonetheless. Well, certainly there was a significant opposition, let's put it that way, and it was overwhelming, but apparently it can be done in some of the community, in the smaller communities, and I wonder if you've been staying in touch with those communities and offering your support as a Coalition on Homelessness when these laws come up.
Well, we always offer our support to anybody, you know, who calls and asks for our support, information.
Excellent. Send me a copy of the May Street Sheet.
I will.
Let me give you the address.
Okay, hold on. Hold on.
You are Bobby Joyce, so let's get that clear. This is not Jones, James, or Jeans. This is Bobby Joyce. He is the Joyce. All right, well, listen, I'm glad that you and others undertook this suit. I hope you are successful, and I'd like to get more updates. Feel free to give us a call, Bobby.
I thank you for your support and for your listeners to hear me out.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Bobby Joyce of the Coalition on Homelessness, a lead plaintiff in the Matrix case. The decision by Judge Jensen refusing to respect the rights of homeless people in San Francisco is actually called the Joyce decision, after Bobby Joyce. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is a recorded tape on May 13th, 1996. We are playing for you some interviews that have not yet been aired. Indeed, we've been trying to play interviews at other times as well, since I have many hours of tape that I think would be of interest to folks who are following these homeless issues, these issues of civil rights for people without roofs, people who live outside, and people who simply want there to be a society where all kinds of people are tolerated and no one is excluded and respected, not just tolerated, respected. There actually is going to be a demonstration coming up, which folks might be interested in knowing about. On May 31st, there will be a huge circus at the county courthouse, a 10 o'clock, I guess, mass arraignment of folks arrested under this city sleeping ban in the City Hall sleep-out protests. Again, a protest that's been going on for 75 days, starting on March 1st. To get the day of the protest that we're on now, you simply add 62 to the current date. Today is the 13th, 62 and 13 makes 75. This is day 75, and tonight will be night 75. So anyway, on May 31st, there's going to be a demonstration at 9 o'clock in front of the county building, to drum up public support for and press information onto the public regarding this ridiculous, costly waste of money that the city is forcing us all to undergo, rather than re-examine its anti-homeless law, the city sleeping ban, municipal code 6.36.010. So you're invited to come to that. If you want more information about that, give a call to the Common Thread Coalition at 421-9250. That's the Common Thread Coalition, 421-9250. As I said before, I may not be with you for these next 2 months because of this jail sentence. You can still leave a message on my line, 423-4833, and those messages will be picked up. And hopefully, if you have a long message, for instance, about an upcoming event or simply a statement of information, a report about police abuse, something else you think is of public interest, we'll put that on the air. Beggarbacker Becky Johnson is going to be on the air covering my show during the time I'm in jail, and no doubt there'll be a number of other guest hosts taking up the slack. And again, there's the possibility that I may not go to jail after all. We'll see what happens on Thursday, May 16th. But in the event that I do, don't fail to keep calling in with reports that will inform the community and stop the institutionalized abuse that's happening every night under the city's sleeping ban and the kind of easy discrimination that's going to be going down, particularly as we see the new construction in the Swenson-purchased former Ford's parking lot area, which is right at Cathcart Pacific at Friendship Corner, or Hippie Corner as some call it. There's a new fence up there. Things are beginning to look like the construction is underway, and the sitting ban will come into play. Speaking of which, I went to the 7-Eleven last night buying some coffee for the folks at the sleepout on Sunday night, May 12th, and ran into a tall fellow employed there who told me that he had been approached by a police officer under the sitting ban for sitting down near Anibus Warpus, the former Anibus Warpus store up on Pacific Avenue. He expressed his disgust and his outrage at the issue, but I guess the point is that folks are being harassed on Pacific Avenue. And indeed, there are, interestingly enough, claims were made by Mayor Rotkin. You'll see a long letter of Mayor Rotkin's if you read this week's City on a Hill newspaper in the letters section, attacking me personally and defending the city's sleeping ban and so forth. And it's called Mayor Rotkin Responds and takes up a whole column and a half, about the same amount of space, somewhat longer than the letter that I wrote 2 weeks before. And one of Rotkin's claims, not actually mentioned in this letter, but which he repeats, is that blankets, when they were stolen from protesters, were only done so because they were to protest and they had an interest in having their blankets stolen, or they put themselves in the line of fire, or they shouldn't whimper and wail because, after all, they wanted to make a point in court. Of course, this is a ridiculous argument. The protesters want their rights respected just like any other person in Santa Cruz, and what they're trying to do is put the spotlight on police abuses and institutional city abuses if they occur, which they do. And for Rotkin to justify those abuses by saying that he's helping out the protesters with that kind of thing is ridiculous. That's all I can say about that. Now, recently, as you may know, blankets have not been taken from the vigil due to pressure by Celia Scott, well, due to pressure by Dan Hopkins, Sean Alimi, Pat Ring, and other protesters, and finally picked up by council members Byers and Scott, who then got the city attorney and the city manager involved, and the city attorney tried to deduct the issue, saying, well, blankets are just, they don't have to take the blankets, but they can as evidence if they want. Rotkin has continued to say, well, it's only these protesters that are getting arrested. It's only these protesters who are being harassed. Elsewhere in the city, folks who know how to camp and hide out and do what they want, pretty much. And he's seen some of their camps. He's gone up there, he's seen their faraway camps, and those folks are left alone. You know, all is well with those people. Well, that is not my experience, both from going to the courts, where, since I go to the arraignments that our protesters have, I find other people on the court calendars under 6.36.010, which is the anti-homeless sleeping ban. And usually there's at least two or three people on the calendar always one who is not part of the protest, picked up on a warrant for camping, which is usually part of a bunch of other charges, but there it is, it's still there, this sleeping charge. Additionally, we get reports. I got a report a week ago of a man whose backpack was stolen by police who found him sleeping and gave him a sleeping ticket, and the man showed me the sleeping ticket, and that there was no receipt for the backpack, it was simply taken. Then three or four days ago, a report was passed on to me from the vigil of a man whose backpack was not taken, but whose blanket was taken, and this was in a public drunkenness charge, and he was actually given a receipt for the blanket. And apparently the man showed that to the protest demonstration folks, and they passed on the word to me. So Rutkin is wrong. People are continuing to suffer harassment throughout the city. I mean, how could it be otherwise when there are 500 to 1,500 homeless people who have to sleep? There are no public bathrooms at night, so they get to piss wherever they can and crap wherever they can. Rutkin will not even open up a bathroom for the protesters, and yet the main reason that there were meetings scheduled between Celia Scott, Catherine Byers, and the protesters every Monday at 11, and there's another one today, by the way, even as you listen to this tape, was to deal with that, the difficulty of how unsightly and unsanitary the demonstration was and how that could be best dealt with. We've succeeded in turning that into a different topic, the real topics in question, namely, how do we change the laws so that the protest won't be necessary? But Rutkin and the council doesn't seem to be interested in opening up new public bathrooms at night, though that was something we did bring up and ask them, the council members, to put forward to seek to get staff input on. Indeed, that's what we're trying to do today. We're trying to get Celia Scott and Catherine Byers at this 11 o'clock meeting to actually get the city staff to start investigating real possible changes in the sleeping ban, what has been successfully done in Miami under federal court order, under the Pottinger decision, what was successfully done in Santa Barbara in 1986 until it was crushed by a reactionary judge in 1989 when the sleeping provision of the camping ban down there was eliminated. We need to see some concrete steps taken by the city to begin to investigate this, and we need concrete steps by those so-called liberals, Byers and Scott, who say they support us, and yet have been in the past extremely timid, and now possibly maybe taking some tentative steps to actually bring the issue into public view. You can't win until you try, and you may have to lose a couple of times until you win. But Byers and Scott so far have not wanted to do anything until they're assured their four votes. Kennedy continues to tell reporters like a better backer Becky Johnson that he still opposes the sleeping ban. Now, there are those who say, you look at Byers and say, you have three votes, why not go for the fourth? And she kind of shakes her head nervously, indicating she may feel that Kennedy is no longer a firm vote. But for those of you who are interested, there is a city council meeting on Tuesday, May 14th. That's going to see the return of for the second reading of the ordinance that bans selling jewelry or non-commercial sales down on the wharf and along the Lighthouse Drive and so forth. I think this is a discriminatory ordinance where there is no other area for those who need to sell their wares or to trade their wares for donations. There's already an existing ordinance of this kind, I understand, downtown on Pacific Avenue, and we see what the police do with that, running around harassing people at the merchant's behest. We have a situation where something like Berkeley exists, where there are actually stalls can be put out by people who want to sell on the streets, or there are areas where people who want to and need to legitimately exchange their crafts for the necessities of life can do so without paying enormous taxes and securing ridiculously involved licenses. That actually brings business to town. I mean, this is the irony of it. These laws they're trying to run homeless people out, are trying to destroy the color and diversity, that are going to supposedly turn things into a great money-making machine like Carmel or Capitola, are actually having the opposite effect. The community survives and thrives on diversity. So, I don't know, I guess there's some who would dispute that with me. I'd say business is up, the downtown ordinances are working, sit on the sidewalk, go to jail, that's a great moneymaker. I don't think so, and I think it's going to continue to be a flashpoint. These hosts who are newly expanded from 4 to 5, the city council quietly pushed through with their appropriation. The businesses who don't want to pay these assessments are being forced to, essentially by court order. Margaret Marr, a business person downtown, an attorney with a legal business downtown, was forced to do this, even though she didn't want to do it. She sued them and so far has not been successful in resisting this compulsory assessment to support the hosts and these repressive downtown practices. And the hosts are still, as far as I know, carrying at least one of them, pepper gas, gas which the ACLU claims is responsible for over 30 deaths since 1993, gas which has been banned by the district attorney in San Francisco. Although the police department, I guess a week or two ago, said, oh, it's fine for San Francisco police. The police commission said, go ahead, just train your people better. Well, I'd like to see the hosts here in Santa Cruz trained in mediation skills. I'd like to see that whole process that was miraculously applied to the drummers' situation applied to the hosts. You may remember that the drummers were facing a drum after 8 o'clock, before 10 in the morning, go to jail law, which was the result of problems downtown where drummers were drumming too late and too inconsiderately near the residential areas where older folks were, and out on Lighthouse Drive as well, where the Pelham neighbors were complaining. And the Parks and Rec then initiated a draconian ordinance which said you can get one permit a month for 4 hours, period. Otherwise you can't drum at its beach in that area. Drummers are getting together to try to promulgate a voluntary code, come to some understandings about how drumming should be done and how folks can approach them so that if they are having problems sleeping, they can get that issue out, which I think is really commendable. It's along the lines of the Street Performers Guidelines, which Tom Noddy, Jan Luby, and others back in the early 80s were able to successfully substitute for a series of oppressive laws that the merchants and some members of the city council wanted to pass at that time. Ironically, then, the city council was much more conservative. Now we have a bunch of liberals on the council, and they give us the model for oppressive legislation in California, the downtown ordinances. We have the worst, or one of the worst, sleeping bans in California, barring sleeping not only in public spaces, but on most private spaces, almost any private building that isn't a domicile. For instance, if you fall asleep in a restaurant, theater, church, believe it or not, it's illegal. And there have been cases in each of these instances of citations being issued for these things. Not recently, admittedly, but within the last decade. And you never know when these clowns or when the police are going to make a decision to do that. And the fact of the matter is, as we know, there's somewhere between 500 and 1,500 homeless people in the city who have no legal place to be and have to hide. And you read stories of rape in the papers. A woman was raped, I guess, what, 3 or 4 days ago, and a small story showed up in the Sentinel under the bridge. Would that have happened if there, for example, were a campground or several campgrounds or legal camping areas for people to be where they could feel safely and not have to hide out? Maybe it would have happened anyway. Maybe it wouldn't have. But the fact is that in terms of overall violence, Michael Rodkin's falsehoods, to the contrary, notwithstanding, the River Street, Coral Street open-air shelter, the campground for the last 2 years in 94 and 95, had much less violence and abusive behavior than, let's say, people were suffering when they were isolated and forced to hide. That was my understanding through numerous interviews with people out there. And of course, when it served Rotkin's purposes, when it served the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's purposes to close it down, they closed it anyway and just broke their word to the campers that they'd made. A point I've often brought up on the station. Community House, that's the set of 10 trailers, the Trailers Not Trolls project that's going up on the bones of the campground out there at Highway 1 and Highway 9, is coming up for discussion for folks who are interested on May 14th. That's Tuesday, that's tomorrow morning, at 8:15 in the morning, at the Social Services Program Subcommittee. And they sent me one of their agendas. They're in the Mayor and City Manager's Conference Room, Room 10, at City Hall. That's the conference room that we're actually going to be meeting in today, probably almost about the time you hear this tape, talking to Celia Scott and Catherine Byers on how to get the City Council off of zero on the issue of the camping ban, the sleeping ban. They're going to, the Rotkin, Kennedy, and Yokoyama, who are the three council members on this Social Services Subcommittee, will be meeting tomorrow at 8:30 in the morning, and on their agenda is only one item, Citizens Committee for the Homeless representative regarding Community House. What they want, what the CCH wants, is more money for its trailer project. More money for its $617 a month drug and alcohol free, but planted in the middle of a drug and alcohol region, pro-duet right next to all the homeless services, which everybody uses. And then they're going to fence that sucker off and have security and have fences and have no private phones and have drug tests. You know, it's not that one would oppose halfway houses and these programs generally, but when they are being run by people who have lied to the homeless people, broken their word regarding the campground, people who have excluded homeless activists from their meetings under pain of arrest, people who are essentially rounding up money for their projects and are the monopoly service provider in the city here, and I really have to account to nobody, because these people they're talking to on the city council are going to give them a blank check. Have already. They reject any criticism. Even Celia Scott, the most liberal member, she herself was a board member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless for the last 6 years, and she has had no criticism of them. Not a word. No criticism. Similarly, when you listen to Mike Rotkin or read his recent written material, for example, this letter I mentioned to you earlier, the City on the Hill Press letter, he writes, "So why has Robert Norris singled out the city of Santa Cruz and its mayor and council for attack as anti-homeless? Simply because it is a city where people take concern for the homeless seriously. We spend more per capita on homeless programs than any city in the country. Although we provide inadequate shelter space in the summer in Santa Cruz, we do provide more shelter than most communities in the summer, and we have empty shelter spaces in the winter months here." Of course, he doesn't say why they have empty shelter spaces, because people do not want to go into a crowded armory where they're likely to suffer. If one person coughs, everybody gets sick, or they don't want to be herded into lines at 4 or 5 in the evening and dumped out in the early hours of the morning, missing chances to attend evening events, missing chances to finish up work, and so forth. "We are currently seeking a way to expand our summer shelter space. I'm not sure how they're doing that, maybe by praying. I haven't seen any action going on around that. The police are more respectful of the rights of everyone, homeless included, in this town than most places." Well, they're more respectful than the San Francisco police. That certainly can be said. I don't know if they're more respectful than the Watsonville police, where there's a lot of camping allowed in spite of a nasty ordinance passed in 1987, modeled after Santa Cruz's. "Hard work on the part of public officials, myself included," this is Michael Rotkin again, "and selfless individuals who provide real services to the poor and homeless have persuaded the majority of our community that providing services to the poor is the right thing to do. It has taken many years of door-to-door work, public speaking and writing, and discussions with community groups to overcome the prejudice that exists against the homeless in every community in this country." Again, he's tooting the horn of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, the group that he supports somewhat unthinkingly and somewhat uncritically. And the problem is that without any critical examination of the problems that have arisen last fall when the Citizens Committee was going to press through its community house project on the ruins of the campground come hell or high water, homeless people protested, necessarily, because accommodations for 20 to 40 is obviously a great step down from accommodations to 150 to 250, which is what you had out there before. And by accommodations, we're talking about emergency shelter, a legal place to sleep. And Rotkin, of course, hasn't championed opening up the Poganip, hasn't championed opening up any kind of public parks, hasn't championed opening up zones of the city, hasn't supported it. All he's done is attack those who have made those suggestions, who have pressed those demands, and support the arrest and harassment of those outside City Hall who are sleeping there because of his negligence, because of his callousness, because of his refusal to recognize the basic human rights issue, and perhaps because of his political opportunism. After all, we do have an election coming up here in November. I don't know whether he's running or not. He certainly hasn't said he's not running. This would be his fourth, count them, fourth term. And, you know, here's a man who originally supported making the sleeping ban a misdemeanor crime if you sleep twice in 48 hours. Here's a man who is just clear on this issue in terms of the fact that he will not budge. Now, frankly, I think he will budge. I think that if one more council member comes in line on this, or if Kennedy made a strong statement about this publicly and started pressing the issue publicly, Rotkin or Yokoyama would quickly begin to reconsider. So while I look at the sleeping demonstration that's gone on for 75 days, and frankly hasn't grown much bigger, although it's grown a little bigger. Last night when I was out there, there were, oh gosh, I don't know, 10 or 15 people there, and I'd say 5 or 6 people were laid out sleeping, ready to get their sleeping tickets if they had to. So it's continuing. It's continuing. It's going on night after night. And it's true it's not being joined by great numbers of homeless people. They don't want to get tickets. You know, nobody does. That's the point of the demonstration, eventually not to get tickets. But sometimes you've got to risk a little in order to get a lot. And, that's what people who are involved in these demonstrations think. Well, a number of events are coming up in the next few days, and even today there's a budget meeting of the City Council at 5 o'clock today, continuing their budgetary discussions at City Council Chambers. I believe that's at 5 at 809 Center Street. I would encourage people from the sleep out to wander into that and suggest that maybe they could, you know, plunk down a little of that money for a campground. That would be a nice idea so that they could stop police expenses for ticketing and arresting homeless people and deal with the issue of legal places to sleep. At the same time, right across the way in the city manager's conference room, which